thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
We are in the company of two big thinkers. Details in a minute. 107 in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is John. Appreciate you tuning in. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3. Check me out Saturday mornings too, please. We do a nice show there. That's Saturday mornings from 10 to noon after Lou Manfredini. He's Mr. Fix It. That's Lou Manfredini until 10. Then we go on from 10 until noon.
So I was reading in the Chronicle of Higher Education, as I am wont to do.
There's this publication called the Chronicle of Higher Education. It's where smart people go to read about education. And there they have a blog post, The Voice of Chicago. And the Chronicle of Higher Education wrote Alan Metcalf, as far as I'm concerned, Violetta Podramedic is the voice of Chicago.
Who would have thought?
Between noon and 7 p.m. on weekdays at WGN Radio 720, she shares the microphone with John Williams, Ro Khan, Anna DeVellantis, among others, reporting Chicago traffic and anything else that comes her way. I listened to her while sitting in my car at the downtown intersection, he writes, of Main Street and College Avenue in Jacksonville, Illinois. Population about 20,000, some 200 miles southwest of Chicago. It's the height of the evening rush here. It's about 10 minutes long. But I'm a Chicagoan myself, and now and then I really miss my serious hometown traffic. And then he describes some of the actual quotes from some of Violetta's traffic reports. Traffic is still light across the board. The Kennedy is 27 minutes out, 20 in.
That sounds like me.
More generally, he writes, WGN Radio brings me back into the city, even when Violetta isn't on the air. Well, I hope so. Thank you for that. WGN's slogan is Chicago's very own, and it focuses on breaking news, politics, sports, entertainment, culture, everything that keeps the city going. Fortunately, WGN Radio maintains vestiges of its grand past, and one of them is traffic reporting. He likes not only how you do the traffic and that you sort of explain what some of these things are, the Jane Byrne interchange downtown where all of the highways crash into a giant spaghetti bowl, the Hillside Strangler. He says that you do it in a kind of millennial way, and he likes that sort of attitude on this radio station. And then he goes back to quoting you. The Eisenhower is 20 minutes in, 27 on the flip. The flip? That's Violetta's millennial way of saying going in the opposite direction.
It's much shorter.
I had to edit
a
little bit.
A lot of travel times to get to.
Yeah, I know. I thought if he was really going to do justice to traffic, he would have done the, you know, 97 minutes in from Mannheim Road to downtown on the Ike. I've been in that parade before.
Just so you know, I transfer that into how many hours and minutes.
Say that again?
I don't say 97 minutes.
You say an hour and 37 minutes.
Yeah, that's more approachable.
The Voice of Chicago from the from Chronicle.com, the Chronicle of Higher Education, wrote about us. And did you see? So congratulations. Kudos to you.
Thank you. It's very flattering and I'm honored to hear all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I swear that person's not my dad.
And then in Sneed today in the Chicago Sun Crimes, Tinas Tattle. This is Michael Sneed in the Chicago Sun-Times today. A legendary Chicago media icon just got a back pat, to wit, in former Vanity Fair editor, magazine czarina Tina Brown's new book, The Vanity Fair Diaries. She notes, quote, "The TV anchorman, Walter Jacobson, who interviewed us on his show, was better than anything on network TV. He had a great reckless spirit, impatient, risky, contrary, and real. That's now our own Walter Jacobson, whose commentaries and commercials you hear here on WGN Radio." And there was Sneed writing about how Tina Brown remembers him when they interviewed. I just talked to Walter before we went in. I said, "Walter, when did you interview Tina Brown?" He goes, "I don't remember." He's done so many. You know, for you and me, Tina Brown would stand out. He goes, "Yeah, might have been with Fox, could have been with Channel 2, not sure." I said, "Well, does it ring true?" He goes, "Yeah," because he went back and found the passage. He said, "The nice thing is after Tina Brown talks about Walter Jacobson, she goes on to say, what a great city Chicago is. I could live there," says Tina Brown. And I could, too. Thank you for that, Tina. Now I got to get the book, The Vanity Fair Diaries. I'm interested in that. I haven't heard that title. Speaking of anchor people, I got a text message last night from a friend who said, have you seen this Lester Holt story? I'm about to play some audio for you. Lester Holt was in North Korea getting ready for the Olympics.
Have you 100% checked this out?
Well, I'm about to play the audio, and I read the story. What do I need to know?
I don't know. I just want to make sure, because it's so depressing if it's all true.
Well, here's the deal. So he is in North Korea, and he's getting ready for the Olympics, which will be in South Korea. 21 athletes from North Korea will join. Lester will talk about this in his report. But North Korea and South Korea are combining their countries, and some of the athletes will compete under the same flag. Isn't that wonderful? So there's NBC reporting on this. The problem is that North Korea is a terrible place that is terrible to its citizens. And if ever there was a capital of fake news on Earth, it is North Korea. Whenever they invite journalists to North Korea, they're always chaperoned. You always are shown what they want you to see. Sometimes ghost cities or villages or buildings are set up to make it look like they're modern, but in fact, they're just fronts. And the people are always coached and watched. And so when you see any reporting from North Korea, the reporters are always very careful to acknowledge that this is their version, but it's all we got. We can't roam freely about in this country. NBC, however, has an axe to grind, a dog in this hunt. NBC is selling the Olympics. I think they're going to lose their shirt on this one. Maybe they won't. I hope the games will be wonderful, but ramping up to the Olympics, we don't have good news. We're still reeling from the sentencing of the women's gymnastics doctor. Granted, that's a summer sport, but it's Olympics. I really don't know that much about the Olympians. You know, we've got some men and women from the Chicago area that are dance, ice skating and bobsledding and so on and so forth. But we really don't have a great sense of anticipation going into these games. And NBC has been criticized in the past for softballing it, right? So if you're in China, say, again, another very repressive country. Remember the opening of the Olympics in 2008 in Beijing? Wow, was that fantastic. How can you not report it that way? But maybe they should have told us more of the backstory of the people and the culture. I don't know the answer to that. To be honest with you, I think I'm happy just to see the good part. I don't know that I want to watch the Olympics and get a comprehensive view of the repression of some of these countries. Really, I think that's an interesting question to ask. I don't know the answer. What do you say if you're in South Korea covering the Olympics about North Korea? Do you need to give us a constant tutorial about how bad it is, or how far do you go? Okay, so Lester evidently didn't go far enough, because here he is reporting to Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, reporting to Hoda on the Today Show. We'll start with number one, and this is him just saying where he is.
Savannah and Hoda, good morning. This is the Bunny Slope at a very modern ski resort here in North Korea.
Okay, so there he is. And there's a bunch of people out there, and they look like they're skiing and having a good time. If you didn't know, he could have been in Vail. They said one of the tells to the NBC folks there, and the president of NBC News was on this trip, was that all of the happy skiers seemed to be wearing the same outfits. Like they went to the ski shop somewhere in North Korea and they said, all right, you people, wear these clothes. NBC's coming. I don't do a North Korean accent. And wear these outfits. But I'm sure it's very short and succinct. Wear these outfits for American television. So they're all skiing in the background, but I think they'd be bussed out of there as soon as the NBC cameras locked down. The reporting on it, though, said that they completely ignored all of this, and they were had. Here is a minute 15, the remainder of Lester's report to the Today Show. Tell me what you think of how he portrayed the story.
We're here because some of the athletes from the South and North, based on this new alliance, will be doing some of their training here. It's been announced the North Koreans will field 22 athletes in the upcoming Winter Games in South Korea. That's fueling some sense of hope and optimism of cooperation in other ways between the two countries. We arrived in North Korea on Saturday. We flew the North Korean state airline. It's about an hour and a half flight from Beijing. They even make an announcement in flight when you've actually crossed the border into North Korea. We quickly passed through immigrations, went through a very lengthy and very detailed customs inspection of not only our equipment, but our personal items down to the novels we were reading, even in one case, a toothbrush of our crew members. But we have been treated with respect here. We have been invited and are guests of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. We stayed in a guest house outside Pyongyang last night, and then made our way to this ski resort to get a look at a part of North Korea that most Americans don't see, and certainly a part they would like us to see. And Savannah and Hoda will be speaking to a member of the North Korean Olympics delegation about the recent talks. He was a member of those talks, and we'll have that on NBC Nightly News. For now, we'll send it back to you in New York.
I don't think it was so bad. I thought it was going to be a lot worse. I thought he was going to say, look at these happy, smiling North Koreans in this, a vibrant part of their economy. He didn't do that at all. I was expecting something. I don't know, maybe you heard it differently than I did. He reminded you that as they were being shown this place, it is what the North Koreans want you to see. But maybe he should have said, you know, I'm a little suspicious about these skiers. A lot of them look like this is the first time they've ever been here. He could have done that. Didn't have to do it. He didn't do it. I don't think that's the end of the world. One other note about the way things get reported.
So can I just say, because I just did a Google search to try to find, and it was Fox News that really called him out, right?
Yep. Yep. Well, but then, but the story I saw, you're right, Steve, was Fox News sourced. Others have reported it. And there's a lot of verified tweets about it as well.
Okay, because
that are critical.
I'm looking at like ABC News did a piece on it, sort of in lieu of the Fox attack and things like that. But
I just don't think it was that bad. Right. I had heard. I mean, I was sent it by somebody who said, "Oh, this is so sad, and what's happening to NBC?" And I think they do have real problems over there. I think their product has been suffering, but I think Lester Holt's getting beat up unfairly on this one.
And he went there to cover the Olympics, not political issues.
No, you went to North Korea. And he said it all. I mean, I went, not that it's the same. I went to the Soviet Union in the 80s, same sort of thing. You know, they would go through your books. They would open up packs of cigarettes to look through them. He talked about all of this.
He acknowledged that. And here's the thing. When you watch the Olympics this year, starting in, what's the date? What's the first date of the Olympics? It's, is it February? Is it January? It's February. When the Olympics come on your TV, do you want them to talk about the politics of the world, South Korea, North Korea? They could do with every athlete, with every story. They won't. How much should they? Should they ignore it completely? You generally get this sort of varnished view of these countries and the sweeping cityscapes and mountains and the story of the athletes that have overcome things. I love that stuff. I know that people are bad and governments are corrupt and there's violence in the world. I'm not watching the Olympics for that. So a little bit of backdrop is good. But if NBC decides we really need to make this a tutorial on North Korea, South Korea, I think they will miss an opportunity to tell the story I've waited for 4 years, and that's of the American bobsledder from Chicago or wherever. That's what I want to see. I'll get that other stuff. Trust me. You can't avoid that other stuff. Just one other note about reporting these days. An event planner who landed a job in the Trump administration has apologized for calling a White House correspondent Miss Piggy during a Twitter spat. Lynn Patton, who heads a regional housing and urban development office overseeing New York and New Jersey, called April Ryan, you'd recognize her, of the American Urban Radio Networks, Miss Piggy, in a now deleted tweet that also included the hashtag bankrupt blogger. An hour later, Patton wrote, "I deleted my last tweet by choice. No one from this administration contacted me. It was beneath me, and I apologize to @April Ryan. My parents raised me to respect others, and I regret my response. I apologize to them, @Secretary Carson and the Trump family. They deserve better," Patton added. Ryan appeared on CNN and said that she and other reporters have received death threats as a result of the president's attack on the press. That's April Ryan, the Urban Radio Network reporter. Patton, who spoke at the Republican National Convention and planned Eric Trump's wedding before she was appointed to HUD, with no prior housing experience, dismissed Ryan's concerns on Twitter. As a conservative black female, she said, who has publicly worked for and supported At Real Donald Trump, I've been getting death threats from fellow minorities on the left for the past 3 years. So welcome to the club, at April Ryan. But then they went back and forth, talking smack to each other. And finally, the HUD secretary or assistant secretary said, quote, I hear hashtag Miss Piggies still on a rampage. Gee, I must have struck a nerve, at April Ryan, hashtag bankrupt blogger. That's just the way business is done these days, and that's not good. So this is interesting. The Mincing Rascals talked about this in our podcast. We just recorded it today. We always do Thursdays at about 11 in the morning. You'll be able to see and hear the Mincing Rascals about 5 o'clock when it goes live or when we post it, wherever you listen to your finer podcasts, including WGNRadio.com, the Mincing Rascals. We talked about tackle football in the Chicago area, actually in the state of Illinois, being banned for kids 12 and under. It's named after the late Bear Dave Duerson. Steve Bertrand will report on that in 7 minutes on WGN. John, I know you were talking about a fictional bobsledder from Chicago, but we do have an actual Olympian from the area. No, I listened. I know about this. Brady Tennell is a figure skater from Carpentersville on the Olympic team. Yeah, we've reached out to her family. They're really busy these days. We have a ice skating pair, husband and wife, that will be competing in the Olympics. We were set to have them on the air yesterday. Technical problems kept us from doing that, but hopefully we'll connect with them. And there was a bobsledder story, and I thought there was a Chicago connection to that. I think there is.
Yes, and her first name is, I don't know how to pronounce it, Seun, maybe, S-E-U-N. And
she's from Africa, or where's she from?
From Chicago.
Yeah, but I wonder. But her heritage is not
Nigerian.
That's what I'm thinking.
I'll fact check first. But she's on a three-person bobsled team.
Yeah. So here are some of your texts, John. I'm with you. I don't care to hear about North Korea's politics during the Olympics. I know their politics. From the 312 area code. Didn't you think it would have been dangerous for Lester to criticize North Korea while he was still there? 773, I wonder about the North Korean athletes. Are their families held until they return? And this one says, Lester Holt said all he needed to say in a friendly way. We know they're wackos over there in North Korea. Steve and I were at Loggerheads on the Helmet Heads kids playing football.
We were. I think, yes, we were. I was right and you were not.
In the Mincing Rascals podcast, we spoke about the Duerson Act, which is what a terrible tragedy that is. If I had a kid who was an athlete and when they're little they can play soccer or lacrosse or football or basketball, whatever, I would so discourage them from playing football. And yet I'm going to be watching the Super Bowl. I was totally stoked for the Vikings. It's a shame that some of the Earth's best athletes able to compete in a brutal but also sometimes artistic sport find themselves in an endeavor that now just isn't safe.
Have you ever stood on the sidelines of an NFL game?
No.
It's like being surrounded by missiles. I mean, when you're standing there and seeing them run by or tackle in front of you,
yeah.
There's a whole different appreciation than watching it on TV or even in the stands.
And think about that. You love this game. We love to watch it. It's fun to play football in the backyard. And it's even fun to play tackle football up to a certain point, and then it hurts. But what a shame if you were one of the best on earth and you could be a millionaire and loved by people all around the country, and you go, oh, shoot. But we can't do that now because we'll kill ourselves, and that's where they are.
Well, it's worse than that. They can do it now, but they still could kill them. Then they have to make that choice.
I know, but baseball players don't have to make that
right.
choice. Basketball players, football players do, and not all of those skills are so transferable.
No. I mean it sympathetically. It's like such a temptation.
Oh, that's it, isn't
yeah.
it? I mean, you almost don't blame them because some of them survive this. Tom Brady, God bless you, Tom, but you're acting greedy now. Greedy for fame, glory, money. I don't know what it is, but you've got a wife and kids. Don't you think that one of these days it might catch up with you? And yet he keeps going out there. If I were his wife, if I was his mother, I don't know who's alive and what family he has, but I'd say, Dad, it's okay. You will always be the greatest. You can stay home now. But he can't. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's 1:38. Time magazine has a voices series where they acknowledge some of the interesting voices in this country. And one of them is a Chicagoan who is in our studio right now. Shahed Asili is a woman who is the founder of Blue Meets Blue, featured in Time's American Voices series. I saw this online the other day, and we reached out to her, and she said she'd come into our studio. Shahed, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
That's a Syrian name.
Yes. It's an Arabic name, which also happens to also be Indian. I've met a lot of Indians that said, do you know what your name means in our language? I'm like, yes, it means the same thing in mine too.
And what is that?
Honey.
Honey.
Actually, in Arabic, it's honeycomb, but in Indian, it's just honey.
Honey as in bee's honey or
yeah,
honey
like
as in an endearing honey?
Honey that you eat.
I see. And I'm struggling with your name. Say that for us, first and last.
Shahed Asali, and my last name means honey too. So my dad had a fun time with this one.
Honey squared.
Yeah.
And so born in Syria, came here when you were two.
Yes, I came when I was two. My father is a physician, and we relocated. We've lived in the United States, grew up here my whole life.
How long have you been in Chicago?
10 years.
I
got married and moved to Chicago, but I've been was raised in Phoenix.
I see. So a U.S. citizen?
Correct.
How so, if you were born in Syria?
So when my father came to the United States, we obtained our citizenship. We've been here forever. My brother was born here, and we were naturalized.
You must consider, do you think sometimes about your good fortune compared to other refugees, other Syrians?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, we had the, luxury of coming because we wanted, of course, to come. And my parents, my father and my mother came to a country that they believed in its values and its principles and everything about it. And my dad wanted to, be a physician here. But for refugees who are really fleeing their country because of war, I can't imagine what it's like to leave your home not knowing if you'll ever return to it, if it will even be there when the war is over.
Frontline's piece this week was about the Syrian exodus. That was the title of it, Exodus.
Yep.
And there are still people walking from Syria to Germany.
Absolutely.
Or wherever, and hoping that they can have the life that you're fortunate enough to enjoy, as are we to have you and people like you coming to this country. So have you been a fashion designer then? Is that your career?
Yeah, so I did my education, my master's in international psychology. And as I was doing my master's, the refugee crisis had hit an all-time high. This was back in 2011, 2012, I was finishing. And I was doing my master's on working with refugees after arriving to their new country, dealing with PTSD and trauma and other, crisis care. And but growing up, when I used to visit my grandparents in Syria, my grandmother actually is a seamstress. And I say if she was in any other country, and she lived in Paris and London, and she's just this fabulous woman. If she was in any other country, she would have definitely had a heritage brand, been a Chanel Dior, like never bought store-bought clothing for her children. Everything was handmade. So when I used to visit, she would... she sit me down with her as she was sewing and making these beautiful clothing. And she really taught me to love fine fabric and luxury, clothing and the quality of clothing. She also taught me to appreciate, like I said, fine fabrics and the importance of sewing my own buttons and hemming my own clothing and all of that good stuff. So that was something that I grew up with. And then, back and forth between design classes and courses and just been such a hobby of mine. So combining the two seemed really natural to me. Obviously the refugee crisis not only did it hit an all-time high since World War II, but it hit home for me personally. And I knew that there was a way that I could help. So combining the two fit like a puzzle.
What did you do?
I decided to start Blue Meets Blue, which is an ethical clothing line that employs refugees in the United States.
What does Blue Meets Blue mean? Why do you call it that?
Yeah, so, when I was thinking of the name, a picture kept coming to mind, which was refugees sometimes, they take a very difficult journey to leave their country. And an image kept popping in my mind of them getting on a boat and the only thing that they'd see was the blue of the ocean meeting the blue of the sky. And for me, that just symbolized their journey to freedom and their journey to hope.
So that's the name of the company. Mm-hmm. What does it do? How do you connect these things?
So when we first started, we started laying the groundwork back in 2014, and we had contacted a bunch of resettlement agencies around Chicago. Specifically, when we started, it was Syrian Community Network, since this is the biggest humanitarian crisis of our lifetime since World War II. So Syrian Community Network is a grassroots organization in Chicago that helps resettled Syrian refugees. So we had connected with them, with Suzanne and Hadia, the founders, to see how we could survey these women. Specifically, we like to work majority women, to empower women coming into the United States, how we could work with them and how they could survey and see who used to be either fashion designers or seamstresses or, you know, embroidery or whatever in their home country. We wanted to make sure that we're working with people that are working in their skill set, because this helps empower them.
So you find these people in Chicago who have these seamstress sewing fashion skills, and then what do you do?
Right. So after we worked with SCN, Heartland Alliance, Madonna Mission, we then, started reaching out to these women. We started laying the groundwork. We started talking about the company, gauging their interest and their level of efficiency and what they were able to do. And we found out that some people were great pattern makers and some people were wonderful at beading. And then I said, we're launching this company. This is going to happen.
A clothing line.
A clothing line. And we wanted it to be a luxury clothing line.
Is it Blue Meets Blue is the name of the clothing line then?
Correct. Blue Meets Blue on bluemeetsblue.com. And we decided that we were going to, start this ethical clothing line. And another big thing for me was this whole fast fashion industry. We wanted to focus on slow fashion, ethical manufacturing. And so just all around, we wanted the company to just be a good company.
Hmm. So where do you all make these clothes?
We work in the north side, out of the north side right now, where many of them live. And we've noticed when, they sew, they have so many deep conversations about the difficult experiences that they've endured, which has helped them reduce their anxiety and their depression. And so while they're sitting in these circles, they have a safe space, which was an important goal of mine.
It's therapy for them, isn't it?
Exactly. So for me, it's like fashion psychology, and it's a little bit of art therapy.
But you're paying them, they're making a wage?
Absolutely. So when we first started, we were just working together. It was before the company started, and now there's part-time employees, there's contractors, and so on.
So where do I buy the clothes?
Bluemeetsblue.com.
So you don't have a brick and mortar yet, huh?
No, we do not.
You don't retail it or farm it out to other brick and mortar shops?
So the plan is, while focusing on our slow fashion and ethical principles, we definitely this year are looking into expanding into boutiques, high-end boutiques, and department stores.
Why do you say ethical? What does ethical mean here?
Like I said, so we're focusing on the slow fashion aspect of it. As you know, fast fashion, and right now there's the slow fashion movement.
I don't know the difference between the two.
Okay, so slow fashion, it's been a movement which essentially encourages slower fashion production, fair wages to workers, and much less waste. The production of the garments takes longer and it has superior quality, but the people tend to have an emotional connection to their stuff. So it means something to the people making it, and it means something to those who are buying it.
Okay, so this is radio. But I asked you to bring the clothes in, and you did. You brought a whole big rack of these clothes in here. And Elif is videotaping this. Are we live streaming now, Elif? Oh, hi, Facebook. We are on Facebook Live right now, so you'll be able to see our guest, Shahad Asali, who is with Blue Meets Blue. And we'll hold some of the, in fact, let's pause here and then you can hold some of the clothes up, both for our live streamers and for me. We'll describe them. This is high end, would you say? Like, what would, you showed me like just a cream color pair of pants and a black silky top.
Correct.
What's the retail on those?
Sure.
What's the cost?
So some things are ready to wear and some things are more couture and high end.
Those
so
are ready to wear.
Yeah, those are the ready to wear. The ones that are just like the slacks or the what I'm wearing, the peplum jacket. The higher end ones are the ones that have the beading and the intricate work. We source very fine fabric. So the crepe and we, have the satin on the inside and it just feels very luxurious to wear.
I thought it felt luxurious to feel. I'm not going to wear it. These are all women's clothes, obviously. You don't do men's. You going to do men's clothes?
We don't do men's. We're focusing on women's clothing, but
understood.
Hopefully one day we'll expand.
So how much would these clothes cost?
They range. We even have scarves online that are great for the winter, for your neck and whatnot, that range from, we have $60 all the way up to $1,000, depending on the piece.
Do you think people are going to pay those kind of dollars out of charity, or are they going to pay those kind of dollars because they want that item at that price?
Absolutely. So that's a great question. We want our product to be an awesome product. So product first, but also the storyline definitely helps. And people have been so excited that they're, you know, it's not just charity. And these people, the refugees that are coming here, they don't want a handout. They want to work hard for their money and their income. And so when people are supporting the line, they know that they're supporting these people starting a new life, and they're very excited to do so.
Let's talk about the clothes themselves then. And again, we'll show them on Facebook. We'll continue this conversation. We're talking off the air, but on Facebook, we're live streaming on Facebook. Hi, Elif. And you sit right there. We'll continue the conversation. Holidays and a new year bring cherished moments and smiles we capture forever. It says here in a sentence I've been reading for several months now and still don't fully understand. Here's what I'm selling to you. The calendars that we produce at WGN Radio with our friends at 2Ks. Now, look, it's the third week into January. You'll still get a lot of use out of this calendar, but you've missed a few days of beautiful pictures of this city. Each month, it's a different image, and you can personalize the image with your name, the name of a family, friend, a customer. This is a great business gift or keepsake. It's a good thing to have around the house. Look, you're going to need a calendar, right? I want you to get the epic calendars that we produce with 2Ks by going to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the bottom. There's the featured tab. Click through there, and it's real simple to order your 2018 calendars. Images of Chicago with your name personalized in them, in the brickwork, in the ironwork. Digitally, they can do amazing things right now. And the pictures this year are just terrific. So how do you get these? WGNradio.com and scroll down to the featured section. Shahad Asili is in our studio, founder of Blue Meets Blue. She was noticed by Time Magazine as one of the great American voices in their series. You can see that piece online. And it doesn't look like we're live streaming on Facebook right now. Elif is back producing. But we just did. And there you'll be able to see some of the items that we were showing. How have sales been of your clothing line?
Sales have been awesome. When we first started, we had done a bunch of trunk shows around Chicago. We did a few pop-up shops, and now we're expanding around the United States where, you know, if people are interested in hosting us for a trunk show, we've been we've been doing that. And like I said, we're consumer, sale to consumer, so we're direct to consumer. We don't have a middleman. So everything's through the internet. It's been very direct.
The people that work at your company then are all refugees?
Yes, they're all refugees. We have international, right? So we have someone from Mexico. We have someone from Turkey. We have three people from Syria, really from all around the world.
Who designed the line?
First line I designed. Second line I co-designed with someone who just recently resettled in Chicago. His name's Rikan Shamsuddin, incredible designer.
Where's he from?
He's originally Syrian, but he was living in Turkey, and he had his own line there for 3 years. And he worked in these powerhouses, fashion powerhouses, pattern maker.
What was he doing before he ran into you here in Chicago?
He had just resettled, so yeah. It was just perfect.
But you know what I find, and it's not about your industry, but I think a lot of us who hire people in this country who are not born in the United States, maybe citizens, may not be, but some of them are architects or they are fashion designers or they have all sorts of interesting skills, and they're not doing those jobs in the United States.
Absolutely.
They may be working construction. They may be cleaning your house, for goodness sakes.
Exactly.
And it's sometimes heartbreaking to see those skills go unrealized in this country.
And I'm so glad you brought that up. That's one of the biggest things that's adding to the depression, actually, because they come here. There's a neurosurgeon who came and is driving a taxi. And while that's a great job, it's just not his skill set.
That's not a great job. I mean, it's not a great job for a neurosurgeon.
Exactly.
That's unrealized capital.
Exactly. And there's also the people that are, you know, taking advantage and hiring in restaurant wages that know that these refugees can't get a higher paying job, but, you know, they're taking advantage of their situation and being able to pay them under minimum wage.
I want to take that back. If you're a cab driver or want to be a cab driver and that's what you aspire to, I'm happy
Amazing.
You're doing it because I
Absolutely.
Take cabs. Thank you for that.
Yep.
But if you're a neurosurgeon, you should be a physician.
Right. Yeah. You should do whatever you had studied and, you know, wanted to do. And it's just very sad to see that people are getting taken advantage of or are not being given the potential that they can, like you said, reach.
So what's your goal for this?
So we'll be expanding to more cities, and for the next 2 years, you know, we want to support communities with high refugee populations, like sanctuary cities, like the one in Chicago, you know, like California and Texas. And also, we're planning to purchase a large warehouse so that we're able to employ refugees upon arriving to the United States, you know, and they have a job upon coming, because we want them to feel empowered. We want them to start over. And most importantly, we want to change the misconceptions about refugees in the U.S. right now.
Does it make you nuts that Americans dress so casually? Wouldn't it be nice if we dressed, stopped wearing blue jeans and khakis all the time?
You know what? I'm from Arizona, and so living in Chicago is a total step up in terms of the in the city.
Worse.
Yes, my husband's from Florida, so when I go there, I'm like,
help! Well, congratulations! Yeah. I'm glad the time recognized you. I'm glad we found you. I'm glad you brought your clothes
Thanks
and yourself
so
in.
Much.
It's a great story.
And like I said, your listeners can use code WGN for a discount later on this evening.
Yeah, so that was off the air. Let's do that on the air. Blue Meets Blue.
BlueMeetsBlue.com, code WGN, and they get a special discount.
Okay. Thanks for coming in. Let's visit again. Congratulations and continued success.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Your first name is?
Shahid.
Asali.
Asali.
And from Blue Meets Blue.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
It's what we do.
Here's John Williams.
And this is John. It's 2:07. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue until 3. And then on Saturdays from 10 until noon, you can also follow me on Facebook. I'm King John there. Another post today. Producer Griffin's movie thoughts, this time on the Oscar nominees, plus his ongoing effort to watch a movie a day every day of the year 2018. And I believe he is on pace, which is either something to be celebrated or not. I'm not sure.
That's a huge endeavor. That's a huge endeavor.
That's a kind of a commitment that we ask for here at WGN Radio, and frankly, we get.
One movie a day?
A movie a day.
That takes a lot of
time,
attention and time, yeah.
What's the matter, V?
Does it have to be a new movie?
No, it does not.
I recommend The Wedding Planner, then.
That's so funny you say that, because I was thinking of The Wedding Planner when you were talking. Was that, John, was that on the Rascals or with you on the show about the, oh, yeah, it was the housing person who worked as a wedding planner.
Yeah, right, for Eric Trump. And
it was
now,
in the Twitter fight, yeah.
Think about that. It's not who you know, it's what you know. If you're Omarosa and you're on a reality show with Donald Trump, the next thing you know, you're an assistant to the president of the flipping United States. If you are a wedding planner for Eric Trump, then you get to be a secretary at HUD.
So that could be like Wedding Planner 3.
I don't know why I laugh, except that I think, well, I'm 90% sure of this. It's insanely high for me. I'm going to make it 78% that the movies producer Griffin is watching are all new movies to him. So while he'll watch Paddington Bear 2, he'll also watch something that was released years ago, and if he hasn't seen that movie, he'll count it. But they're all new to him.
Does he commit to giving them focus while they're on?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, members of my family are this way. Griffin's my son. My wife is a lot like this. And Griffin's brother is this way, too. They'll come over and watch a movie. They want the lights to come out and there be as little distraction or talking as possible. Mm. I can't sit for 2 hours.
I'm that way, too.
Oh, my God.
So I have a friend who will watch a half of a movie one night and the other half the next night?
Yeah.
No. No can do.
I can't sit there. I've got to get up. I start doing dishes and then I'm over there and I'm making a lot of noise in the sink, and I know that's a little disruptive, but I'm like, you know what? If you guys want that, go to a Cineplex. This is our kitchen and living room. So I'm going to do the dishes.
I think the artists deserve your attention. They work so hard on this.
Yeah.
What if you miss the key line?
What if the dishes miss a key scrub? So I'm doing dishes, and then I walk around. I read, do some sit-ups. I'm the most annoying person in the world. At the movie theater, I'm well-behaved. But at home, forget about it. The LA Times reported the other day, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, this Monday, struck down that state's congressional map, which was drawn to give Republicans a lopsided 13-5 majority. The ruling could shift 2 or 3 seats in the U.S. House to Democrats this fall.
And that follows a similar ruling in North Carolina.
There have been 3 across the country of late.
It's the biggest problem facing this country, I think.
A lot of people think so. And it tends to favor Republicans now because during the last census, 2010, state houses, governorships were heavily Republican. And so it skewed Republican after that. Democrats would and will do the same. But we've got to find a better way to do this. The decision is the third in a year to strike down a state election map. In fact, the justices said you guys have to have a new map by November. There's 24 seats difference between Republicans and Democrats in the House. A lot of people are more interested in following where the Senate goes. But if two or three of these Pennsylvania houses, quote unquote, go Democratic, ostensibly because that's a fair representation of the population, that's significant. Leaders of Common Cause and the League of Women Voters, who brought the suit in Pennsylvania, applauded the ruling as a victory for, quote, voters choosing politicians rather than politicians choosing voters. What an interesting way to put it. Micah Sims, Executive Director of Common Cause Pennsylvania, joining us now on WGN. How are you?
John, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Anything you want to insert based on that lengthy introduction?
So on that, let me jump back to something I heard you guys talking about earlier. How in the world do you watch a movie a day? But I'm going to get off of that because I've got movie buffs in my house, too. That's just kind of like the weirdest thing. But you know what? It's funny. Let me kind of segue back into this gerrymandering piece. You can use a movie called Crazy and Crazier, to really address this issue. It is incredible to think that here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, over the last three congressional cycles, every 2 years, we have consistently elected 13 Republicans and 5 Democrats to the Congress in the exact same congressional districts.
Okay, but why is that crazy? If that in fact is the population or the will of the people, maybe you should have 14 Republicans. Pennsylvania is a red state, isn't it?
John, just so your listeners will know, there are currently 1.2 million more registered Democrats in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania than Republicans. When these maps were drawn in 2011, the Democrats had an 800,000 vote advantage. And so to the point, this would really seems like an extreme case of gerrymandering, where the Republicans did whatever they needed to do to make sure that they were able to come out on the upside of these congressional districts.
I don't want this conversation to sound too much like Republicans are the bad guys and Democrats are the good guys. The good guys are fair representation. Let the chips fall where they may.
Well, John, look at it. You can use Illinois if you want to point out the Democrats, because they've drawn the maps here and made it very difficult on the Republican Party to make any inroads in the legislature.
Yeah, in fact, one of the most bizarrely drawn congressional districts in the country may be one in Chicago. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Micah.
Yes, I've seen the one in Chicago. I think it's 1B in comparison to the congressional district here in Pennsylvania, where the country knows it as Goofy Kicking Donald, which was congressional district 7, where if you look at it, it actually looks like Goofy actually kicking Donald Duck.
That's it. So it's not a circle or a square or a amoeba-shaped blob that would seem to be a logical representation. Did the state houses always control the congressional district maps?
State houses have always controlled the congressional district maps as part of the Pennsylvania Constitution. What actually happens, John, is the legislature produces the maps. It comes in for an immediate vote. There is no debate. There is nothing else. And then it is signed off by the governor, and then implemented, which is different than our state houses and state Senate districts, where there is two Republicans, two Democrats, and a fifth person that is selected to be part of that process.
Well, how is it that you are able to draw a map then? If there are that many more Democrats, how can you find enough people? Because the congressional districts all have to have the same population. So even if you were going to try and manipulate it, at some point, wouldn't you run out of Republican voters? How do they do that?
So one of the techniques that is often used is called trying to compact Democratic voters. And so instead of spreading them out, in a sense, you just compact them all into one district, and then that leaves you with a majority of right. Republican or the majority, whatever party you're working the gerrymander for, in the remaining surrounding districts. So in particular, if you look at the city of Philadelphia, which is predominantly Democratic, but in 2011, everything surrounding Philadelphia were generally Republican districts.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. So just humor me here. Say there's 200 people in your state, 100 are Democrats, 100 are Republicans, and you had, I don't know, so many congressional districts. If you put all of the Democrats in one or two of those districts, the remainders then could be... Does that make sense? And then some of the Republicans would be, but then you'd have the Republicans covering the rest of them, even though the populations would be the same, the district numbers wouldn't.
Correct. That is exactly what gerrymandering, whether it's done from the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, that's exactly one of the.
But you know, and I've run into some of those congressmen. I'm thinking of one Democrat who is the congressman from one of these really densely populated Democratic districts, or it's like he doesn't even have to run. And you know what? He's not fighting for gerrymandering because he does not have a competitive district. He's got a job for life. So you'd think the Democrats would be upset about that, but he's kind of cool with it because it's working for him. You know what I mean?
So, that term is called incumbency protection. And it works in favor of whoever the incumbent is. And so, the group that is already in there wants to stay in there, whether they're Republican or Democrat, and they want it to work to their advantage. And so we'll cut the deal. We'll make sure that all of us are protected. And, hey, if something goes open, good luck, and we'll see who else gets added to the club.
Micah Sims is on a phone line. He's with a group called Common Cause Pennsylvania. He's its executive director, one of the two groups that filed suit with the courts in Pennsylvania to get the maps redrawn to better reflect the population, more registered Democrats in Pennsylvania, 1 million more, did you say, than the Republicans?
I think currently the Democrats are at 1.2 million registration advantage.
And how many advantage?
Okay, 1.2 more. Yep.
So now they're literally going to redraw these maps by November.
So the actual timeline, John, is the Supreme Court gave the legislature until February 9th to redraw the maps. They are to submit the map then, obviously, to the governor, who has to sign off on it by February 15th. And then the new maps, congressional maps, will be official as of February 19th. Now, if by chance the legislature does not present a map to the governor, or the governor will not sign off on the legislature's map, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will take jurisdiction and create the map themselves, so that no matter what happens, the citizens of and voters of Pennsylvania will have new congressional maps for our primary, which takes place May 15th, and then our general election will take place in November. So this is important. This is an important moment in Pennsylvania, because the voters will actually be able to choose their representatives and not have their representatives choose them.
That's constitutional or legal? I mean, I voted for a guy. He's supposed to represent me. And now you don't like it. And so now I'll be living in a different congress. Maybe I'll have a different congressman in the same term, right?
That is very likely. Some people that are opposed to the ruling say that this throws the election into chaos. It creates confusion, et cetera. But I think more importantly, John, what this does, it gives the power of voting back to the voter, to be able to say that I have the opportunity to choose my legislator, that it actually makes sense that I'm voting for a person within this congressional.
But what are the parameters going to be? What are the parameters going to be for drawing these new districts then?
So you still have the same constitutional, you have compactness, contiguity. What the Supreme Court is asking for is that you try to limit the amount of breaks in counties, municipalities, all the way down to wards or precincts. So it's really the same criteria, but just understanding that you're under a microscope, and so you're just not going to be able to politically push something through without some sort of recourse for it.
Sure. Well, in fact, is it possible that they could redraw it and still have a 13-5 advantage for Republicans? Or is this going to, by definition, mean that you have to include more Democrats or increase the probability that Democrats will get elected?
I think if we're talking about fairness and competitiveness, if we're talking about making sure that there is compactness and contiguity and some familiarity within the districts, I think it's going to be a situation where it will provide one of the parties, and in this case the Democratic Party, maybe an opportunity to put up a candidate that will have a better opportunity, a better shot of winning. You know, part of this that we can't control is we can't control the candidates. What we would like to see is just a fair process by which everyone has an opportunity to have their vote counted, but also that we would have some fair and competitive races.
I'm going to let you go, Micah, but will this resonate in Illinois or other states?
It's going to resonate. I think, John, I hope your listeners will pay attention to what's getting ready to happen in the United States Supreme Court. They've got, I think it's now 4 incredible cases to consider in reference to gerrymandering. The Wisconsin case, they have the Rucho case, which Common Cause is very much a part of in North Carolina. Also, there is the gerrymandering case in Maryland, which is actually the Republicans are crying gerrymandering foul against the Democrats. And now I think I read something recently where they're going to take into consideration Texas. So it is the hope that this United States Supreme Court would begin to come up with standards so that it would be easier to say that is a gerrymander, and so that then the states will be able to apply those standards accordingly, and the voters will once again feel empowered. I think part of this, John, and then I think this is important. I think when you see that my vote doesn't count, it disheartens the voters and they stay home. If we're going to exercise democracy, we ought to find more ways for people to be excited about voting and the opportunity to come out and vote.
This conversation may sound partisan, but I don't think it is. And I love the line, voters choosing politicians rather than politicians choosing voters. Micah Sims is the executive director of Common Cause in Pennsylvania. He is not watching a movie a day. All right, Micah.
No, I am not.
Thank you for your time. Here we go. Dance at home.
Come on, it's time to play. Non sequitur.
I made a scrapbook.
We play a game called Non Sequitur of the Day. It's where we take a line from a previous show, play it back. You tell us what they're talking about. You win a prize. I've got another one of those really good prizes, a pair of tickets to Blind Date. That's the story of Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev and their historic meeting at the Goodman Theater. This Goodman stuff's good, you know. It's playing now through February 25th. And I've got a pair of tickets for you if you can tell me what
I made a scrapbook.
What Wendy is talking about, she made a scrapbook of what or whom? That is our...
It's your non sequitur of the day.
Hey, hey!
Come on, it's time to play. Non sequitur.
I made a scrapbook.
What's Wendy talking about right now? 312-981-7200. Just looking at the president's Twitter account. And I know that he was talking a lot about those missing FBI texts between what he calls the lovebirds, and that that's evidence that this whole Russian investigation's been a witch hunt all along. But that story has changed. Okay, details on that in about 3 minutes. We're doing our non sequitur of the day. Here's the non sequitur.
I made a scrapbook.
Where do we go, Producer Elif? To line 3, and that is Mark. You're on WGN. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hey, John, I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. That was Steve Bertrand and Bill and Wendy talking about what?
They were talking about Elton John, his photos, and preparing something to give to Elton Jim before he goes, I think, to his 172nd Elton
John
concert.
You know, that's a good way to get to know somebody. I say, did you ever have a scrapbook of something besides yourself, and who or what was it? So my son had Chuck Knobloch baseball cards. Not a scrapbook, but he had a book of Chuck Knobloch's. I would include that. Steve Bertrand, did you have a scrapbook of anybody or thing in your life other than you?
Well, I didn't have one of me either. No.
Violetta? Kevin? Anybody?
I went to a scrapbooking club, but it was about me.
How about you?
I did not create a scrapbook of her, but I created a collage on my bedroom wall.
That counts.
Britney Spears.
Was your son able to throw the Chuck Knobloch book into the closet, or
yeah,
do you keep missing?
No, don't do that. Those of us that know and love and
it's just a question.
Have been heartbroken by Chuck Knoblauch for both his on-field and off-the-field performances don't appreciate that.
I'm sorry.
Hey, listen, I want you to go see that play and then report back to me, okay? Mark, this sounds pretty good.
Indeed.
Thanks,
John,
for...
you're the best. Listen to you every day, buddy. You're fantastic.
That's nice of you to say, and that's...
That was your non sequitur of the day. For all the winners, I say hooray. Non sequitur.
Two quick sports shout-outs I wanted to do, Steve. One was in yesterday's Chicago Tribune sports section, page one, there was a story about DePaul University and one of the kids on the team from Lewis who went to DePaul. I really want DePaul to succeed. I want them to build that brand and that program out at the new Wintrust Arena. And it was just nice to see them getting some love on page one of the Tribune sports section. Then on the back of the Chicago Sun-Times today, it's a nice big picture of Jim Thome rounding, it looks like, the bases after hitting a home run. And if anybody is good at the pun headline, it's the Chicago Sun-Times. And the headline is... Gym class. You get it? Gym class.
I get that.
Woo-hoo. High fives all around the newsroom there for that one.
Pretty much everyone agrees, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Really?
Wonderful guy.
Yeah. Didn't he finish his career with the Minnesota Twins? Didn't he go out and play for the Twins at the end, or am I thinking of somebody else?
I feel like he went west. I don't know.
Because I saw a guy like that not do so well. You know, it's funny sometimes. These guys, they hate to quit, and their numbers aren't good in their last years. But just what a class act, what a nice career, and it's good to see the Hall include the likes of him in there. Gym class. Gym class. No, gym class.
That's so good.
Just wanted to double check on one of the president's tweets. I had referenced this earlier in the show, and so let's make sure we got it right. This is how the president of the United States communicates with the globe. Here's what Donald Trump said recently. This is about those FBI lovebirds, he wrote. In one of the biggest stories in a long time, the FBI now says it is missing 5 months' worth of lovers stroke page text, perhaps 50,000, and all in prime time. Wow! That's what he wrote. Have they recovered all 50,000 of those texts, or just some of those?
It sounds like, I don't know, you know, that they recovered the ones that were missing, that they used forensics, you know, went back and got it.
Do you think in your lifetime you've texted 50,000 times? How many email and... Yes?
Probably.
And you're younger than me. Of course, we've all been texting and emailing for the same time.
Yeah. She's texted more than you have.
Boy, I wonder.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
I mean, I wonder how many times you text a day? Probably text to somebody. Not tweet, not Facebook, not email. How many times do you text to someone a day? Well, I could probably just check here, see how many times I...
I've probably sent at least 20 texts today.
One, two, three, four,
at least? Six, yeah. Seven. I definitely sent one.
Okay, I've done 9 so far today.
It's not a competition, Violetta.
Yesterday, I did about 10. Okay, so say I'm doing 10 a day. That's 300. That's 3,600 a year. And I've been texting for, say, 10 years. And I haven't been. But still, that would be 0, 3,600. That would be 36,000 texts. So I've probably done 36,000 texts in my lifetime. Probably
no,
not.
No, hold on.
Probably
so if you
less.
Have 50,000 texts, that's the number?
Yeah.
Divided by 365?
Yeah.
In 1 year, it's just 136 texts.
No, for how many years?
That's 1 year.
No, do it again.
No, wait.
let's if you have, somebody do the math on this. If you have 50,000 texts.
Yeah, and if you divide that by
365, that would be how many would be in 1 year.
Right, in 1 year, only 136 texts.
A day. So that's a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's a day.
But think about this. How many years are we talking about, Steve? What was the time span of that?
It was not a full year. I think it was June to December.
You're saying
like
those 50,000 texts were over the course of a single year?
I don't think they were from two people, though. I mean, this was a squatch. What do you pick the word? Of text. It was a batch.
It was a group of people going back and forth.
Yeah, but I mean, it was like, I don't know if it was the whole FBI or if it was a subsection or whatever, but everyone's focusing on these two people. I don't think it was just the two of them.
Lost. It was a batch of text that included them. Well, that's interesting, too. You remember when the...
it was December 2016 to May of 2017, so 5 months.
5 months. Now, that's got to be more than two people. Otherwise, their thumbs would have fallen off.
Right. How could they have ever had an illicit affair if they were always texting each other?
Be sitting there in bed next to each other going, okay, I'll be right with you. Wait, I'm sitting next to you.
I don't like him either. I don't like him either.
I think we all have had children or friends or ourselves who have texted people in the same room. Have you ever done that? You text your spouse, she's upstairs, you're downstairs?
Oh, in the same house, absolutely.
I've seen people text each other on the same sofa.
Well, okay, sometimes that's not good. Just funny.
Right.
And normally you're doing it if you're talking about someone else in the room.
I've never done that, Violetta. Why don't you explain that for me?
Oh, that's an interesting use of text.
Yeah,
I've actually witnessed that being done, and it's really awkward because you don't know if they're talking about you. Or...
All of a sudden you burst out laughing, go, pah! And they go, what? And you go, nothing.
I'll tell you later.
You know where that used to catch up with me, that very concept, is when I would be videotaping my son's athletic or musical events, right? So say I'm at orchestra or I'm at a baseball game and you're videoing your kid and then you're talking while you're doing it. Same thing, how's it going, John? Pretty good. And you're just videotaping the game or the thing. But then you forget, you get caught up in conversation. You know, yeah, this coach is an idiot. Or, you know, I hate my mailman. Whatever it is. And then somebody else, then you put it in the wedding video, and people are talking, and the audio track can sometimes be more revelatory than the video.
Yeah.
So just be careful with that out there, okay?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's an issue anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. That seems to be old school.
With the Snapchat and the YouTubers, plenty of other things on the camera that there's to be concerned about.
Yeah. Speaking of revealing things, I'm still reeling from the fact that while Governor Rauner is trying to keep J.B. Pritzker from being governor, I've also been ensnared in this controversy. We revealed this for the first time on yesterday's show. You may be familiar with the campaign that Rauner's running against Pritzker, who's not even won the nomination yet, but he's run a series of commercials in which they took the old audio tapes that the FBI had of former Governor Blagojevich, and there on those conversations is J.B. Pritzker. And it just looks bad. But Pritzker, in his defense, said, well, if you play the whole 15-minute tape, you would discover that I'm not so bad. And Rauner goes, okay, let's do it. And they bought time on TV this weekend and ran the whole 15-minute conversation on TV. And then you be your judge. Was Pritzker a good guy or bad guy or neutral? I don't know. My own view is Pritzker, there's not a lot to be gained there except that it looks bad. And that be, you know, what is it? Perception's reality. But then they did another one. They got another set of tapes of Blagojevich, and this time, I don't know why, but they're playing back the part that includes me.
This is the unedited Rod Blagojevich FBI wiretap.
Rod, it's John Williams from GN Radio again. How are you? How's the hair?
What follows is the full, unedited, original FBI wiretap recordings obtained by the Chicago Tribune.
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
Viewer discretion is advised.
Are you a lawyer?
No. But I got an A on my constitution test in eighth grade.
Huh?
But wait a minute, I want to be clear about this. It took me two tries, so...
Huh?
So listen, I'm calling about a dance contest that I'm going to be in. You know, dancing?
Go ahead.
Like Dancing with the Stars?
Go ahead.
It's a cancer fundraiser with Arthur Murray, and I was...
Hang on one second. Hey, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm looking for donations.
Hang on one second. Hey, go ahead.
I think it would be good for you. I think it would be good for me.
Madigan is pushing labor to try to push...
Excuse me?
Huh?
Listen, I'm going to be dancing.
Oh, interesting. Let's think about that. You interested in that?
Well, sure. I like to dance, and I just think it would help these...
I hear that Madigan is pushing labor to try to push Lisa.
No, Lisa Madigan isn't in this thing.
Huh?
So can I count on your pledge? $50, $100, right?
I mean, I'm not promising. I'm just saying these are all scenarios.
I'm so embarrassed. That is so unfair. It's so out of context. Here's the deal.
Did he pledge?
That's the thing. I never got a check from him.
he got preoccupied.
You needed to send a check to him first.
Yeah, that's the deal. He was busy going to jail.
He does look good, though, in that blue jumpsuit.
So he is, not he, I, see, that's the problem. I'm going to be dancing at the Dancing with Chicago Celebrities Benefit to Fight Breast Cancer on March 16th.
Oh, you are really dancing.
Yeah. And it's going to be March 16th. It's going to be one of the big hotels here in town. I should find out which one because I got to be there that day.
Don't you have anyone to bounce these things off of before you say yes?
Well, Lou Manfredini did it. He's like, oh, it's great. Oh, okay. You got to do this, John. I'm like, all right, Lou, it's a good cause. I like to dance.
You and Lou are alike in a lot of ways.
And but probably shouldn't bounce ideas off each other.
I don't think dancing is one of them. Ability to.
Well, that's the thing. I think I could probably do better at this than Lou because he's built like a bricklayer. I'm a little more svelte. I'm a little more, I don't know, I think I cut a sort of, I don't know what the end of this sentence is, but I think I'll be a better dancer.
Go ahead. What is it?
I don't know what the end of that sentence is. Right. So March 16th, Dancing with the Chicago Celebrities, and you can make a donation to my team. A young lady named Danny and I will be dancing. Or you can buy a table, and there's cocktails.
You're not going to want to enjoy this alone, people. Buy a table.
Steve, we have to go.
I think it'd be kind of fun. And by the way, you guys might be surprised. I cut a very...
You can't finish the sentence.
I don't know what the end of that sentence is. There's an expression. I don't even know how it goes. But I think whatever that is, I think I can do it.
What kind of dance are you doing? Like
that is the problem. I said, listen, I can do something slow and dignified like the waltz.
Okay.
I could probably do the foxtrot. And she goes, let's do quick step. And in my brain, it's going, don't do the quick step. Don't do the quick step. And my mouth said, yeah, I can do the quick step. So I'm going to do the quick step.
I'm so excited.
Tickets and all the information you need are at AMD, that would be Arthur Murray Dance, WCC, which stands for World Championship Classic. I'm not sure what that stands for. AMDWCC.org. We're going to put it on my Facebook page, so don't worry. You've got time to buy the tickets and watch the video they were going to make of me dancing today in rehearsal.
So when they asked if you wanted to do the quick step, did you know what the quick step is?
Well, we do watch Dancing with the Stars, and I've always thought that looked more athletic than I am now.
What is the quick step?
It's a quick step.
Like, is it one like we have a rose in your mouth?
No, that would be like a salsa.
Mm. So it's March 16th.
Or the cha-cha.
Tomorrow, or the bolero. What is it? The bolero. I want to say the bolero. It's not the bolero.
Well, you have the lingo down about dancing. I will give you that.
The flamingo.
Flamingo. So here's what I want you.
The tango you're thinking of.
Oh, that's that is it.
I don't know if anybody's still listening, but I'm going to be dancing March 16th. We'll post the video on my Facebook page tomorrow. You'll be able to see the evolution of dance by me. And I hope that you want to make a donation to Fight Breast Cancer. More about that later on.
I give you great credit. I would never, ever, ever do that.
That's what I used to say, Steve. That's what I used to say. And then I don't know. In a moment of weakness, they said, hey, it's a good cause. I do like to dance. Brenda and I have taken dance lessons before.
You've mentioned that.
But I never, ever for public consumption. We don't even go to the dance parties. We don't go on the dance cruises. Brenda doesn't have a dance dress. I did buy dance shoes, though. I do have the dance shoes.
Stop.
I want you to say some real nice things. It's 2:53 on WGN. Do I have to read this, Ella, first? What do I got to read here? I got to tell them about Riverside. Taking care of yourself and your family is no easy task. Riverside Healthcare can help with a variety of primary and specialty care providers. Riverside has just the right help for you, the kids, the whole family. They've got over a dozen locations, including the newest campus in Frankfurt. So getting the right care at the right place and right time will make your life much easier. Learn more about the nationally recognized Riverside Healthcare at riversidehealthcare.org. And then there's one last line here. I'm going to have our celebrity mystery guest read. You know, I think I can read a commercial on the radio, but there is a commercial we do for a company called Cat Spot Litter. And the guy that does the spots has the warmest, folksiest. If he said, I'd like you all to meet me and we're going to jump off a bridge, I think I would jump off a bridge because it's just such an inviting, convincing, pleasant voice. He's that guy named Jeff. I got to find it. Say hello.
Howdy, folks.
It's
Jeff with Cat Spot Litter.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that's him.
He's here. Oh, my God. The Cat Spot Litter guy's here.
Say coconut.
Coconut cat litter.
You could use it in your yard.
You use it in your yard.
Yeah. And it's gluten-free and tastes delicious.
No.
Wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got to finish this Riverside Healthcare commercial so that this will just blow up your phone lines. The one I drew the box around at the bottom. Go ahead.
Yeah. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach.
See? Boom. They just made their budget. Boom. That just happened.
Mic drop.
I know, exactly. Say mic drop.
Mic drop?
No, that didn't do it.
Yeah.
So you're from Missouri. That's a real company. That's your company, huh?
Yeah. Cat Spot Litter. We're actually from Missouri, and that's where the coconut cat litter originated from.
And when you think Missouri, you think coconuts. So this is the question I've had. Are these discarded coconuts, or are these coconuts harvested for the purpose of making cat litter?
Actually, you know, we use it in the shell of the coconut.
Right.
It's actually the part that is actually discarded in... By description, a byproduct.
Yeah, so no coconuts were harmed in the making of this cat litter.
No coconuts are harmed. They're just used very efficiently. Yeah.
How did a guy from southeast Missouri fall into the coconut cat litter business?
Actually, it's a pretty long story, but it all focused around a cat.
Yeah.
The cat is the one that actually discovered that the coconut was a good product to use as a cat litter.
Well, we're out of time. I don't have time for the whole story. But it's nice of you to come into the studio and say hello.
Thank you.
We heard you in the building, and I said, I want to watch that voice come out of that man's head, and now it is.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you having me sitting in here for a minute. Yes.
Jeff, it's good. Congratulations. Welcome to WGN Radio. We're glad to have you as a sponsor and continued success with your product.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Where do we find it?
It's catspotlitter.com.
Sure do appreciate you listening.
Okay, now say it real slow. Say something like, hey, everybody, you should listen to the John Williams Show.
Hey, everybody, you should listen to the John Williams Show.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Isn't that awesome? I'm sorry, Elif, what were you saying?
I have one for you.
Okay, here's another one.
Okay, let's give it a try.
How about a shout out to my cat, Magic?
Oh, yeah. Magic's been peeing in your stuff.
Oh, well, Magic is magic then if it's been peeing into your stuff. So, yeah, I'd like to say hello to Cat Magic.
Perfect.
Yeah. Congratulations, and I hope you enjoy your stay in Chicago.
Uh-huh. Thank you all.
Bro's not here today. Justin is. Anna's too. They're next on GN. Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman in the studio.
John.
Just beat 3 o'clock. I know I'm now in your space, but Lou Manfredini just sent me a text.
Okay.
You know that guy Jeff we had with the coconut cat spot?
Great voice.
He just called in. Now I can't stop talking like him. So Lou Manfredini sends me a text and goes, hey, get him to do my line too. So I asked
What's
him to just, heard? Can you, Jeff, do you mind?
No, I'm good with it.
Okay. So nice and slow for Lou Manfredini.
Now back to Lou Manfredini and the Mr. Fix-It Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Now you got to do it again. I
love that.
He bumbled the name. Lou Manfredini.
Lou Manfredini.
All right, do it again from the top in 3, 2, 1, go.
Now back to Lou Manfredini.
Yeah, I know, we laugh too. And then we'll edit the rest of it in. All right, Jeff, thanks for coming by again.
I wish Jeff could stick around for the entire afternoon.
He's putting us to shame.
We could use you, Jeff. This would be awesome.
Yeah, Justin, say something in a regular voice.
Now back to...
That's not bad.
We're all talking like him now.
Pretty good. No, I know, it's infectious.
I sound like this.
Yeah, I get y'all converted over to talking like this.
I like it.
Where are you from, Jeff? What's the deal?
Actually, take a guess. I'm going to tell you.
I would guess Arkansas.
I'm going to say Texas.
Everybody says
Missouri.
We're actually from the southern end of Missouri.
Missouri.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, Missouri. Yeah. Missouri. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We're actually down there where Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, they all touch.
It's a beautiful part of the country, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing on your show coming up?
Well, we're going to talk about this iconic Tribune Tower as some more information has come out about what might be happening. Where you're sitting right now, John, I envision a barista. I see Starbucks.
I know.
Lattes being served, but that's just me.
Is that new tower in our backyard going to be bigger than Trump Tower?
They said it might be close.
Third largest, perhaps?
So Hancock and Willis.
Sears.
Yeah, that's what I still call it.
Just about the same height. So what's going to happen to all the artifacts embedded in the outside of the tower here that we love? And it's got such a special place, I think, in the hearts of so many Chicagoans, this building.
If it's anywhere remotely close to the Trump Tower, Trump will come out and be like, no, absolutely not. Mine is taller. Mine is bigger.
It needs to be 1 foot shorter.
I was thinking when I heard a new tall building was going to go up bigger than Trump Tower, will it have the name on it? Bam!
Right.
Because
I hope that it's an iconic building just for the fact that we can say we once parked where it stands.
Yeah, no kidding. I used to be right there. Hey, I'm going to get out of the way. Have a really good show.
We hope to do so.